Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, a Bet the Board production in conjunction with NASCAR. And we knock another race off the playoff schedule, a relatively tame Talladega. We'll get to that in just a matter of moments. I'm, of course, your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by racing analyst Chris Wormy. And Wormser, I got to ask the question right off the top. Did you force yourself to watch every single lap at Talladega this past Sunday?
Todd, I didn't watch one lap, and I still haven't. The only notes I have on the race are just what I've read on Twitter and what you send over in the pre-race show notes. So, or the show notes for the podcast today. So I honestly listened to Door Bumper Clear, so I have an idea of the storylines, but I just can't get involved. I was just excited to get back to cap in a race. I think that there's going to be some opportunities to make some money this week. So, but I'm done with Talladega. There's nothing we can actually glean to make money in the future. I think the car will change too much next year. So I'm done with Talladega. Moving on, I guess.
Well, this may be the shortest stage one that we have, but there's still some general NASCAR topics that we'll get into at the top of the show, and then we'll move into a couple more actionable elements in stage two and stage three. For those folks new to the Stay Green podcast, you, of course, can follow Chris on Twitter. That's at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast itself at BetTheBoardPod. And you mentioned not watching a single lap at Talladega, and I'll give you a quick recap. It was tame. There's no other word to use to describe what we saw unfold on Sunday. We saw a boatload of lead changes, which was great for NASCAR, 57 in total. There were 17 drivers that actually led at one point. And when you look at the caution flags that came out, only one of the six caution periods was for a multi-car accident, something that's unheard of when we go to Talladega. We hear all the time about the big one. You see 15 cars get tangled up and a lot of it taken out of the field. And I don't want to ever downplay racing. I've never been behind the wheel of a car. I never will be behind the wheel of a car. But that looked like a lot of those drivers when they got into the pack were out for a Sunday cruise. No greater illustration than Joey Logano, who complained about cars that were sitting back, who just went, you know what? I got into a little dust up early. I'm going to ride around here. I'm going to stay out of trouble. And that's how we're going to enjoy our Sunday in Alabama.
Yeah, I think Chastain said something like he was actually kind of concerned about wrecking. And that's just not something you hear out of NASCAR drivers. And I know NASCAR is going to take care of this issue moving forward. It's just one of it's just different racing. And, you know, it's nice to see that there's a tame Talladega race. I remember when that was the norm, you know, I guess tame relative to Talladega. But I think recently it's been, you know, if you look at the last plate race at Daytona where, you know, everything hit the fan late and there were, you know, guys hitting $25 parlays to win a million. It was nice to see, I guess, you know, it's nice to see a favorite go out there and make a move at the end of the win. So, very different.
Chase Elliott, as you mentioned, grabs his fifth win of the season, goes out there, secures passage into the next round. A little friendly at the end. Ryan Blaney may have been more aggressive depending on who he was racing with there at the front. But hey, that's how these things are won. You have to go out there. There's a lot of strategy. And that's the one thing that I've actually come to appreciate in super speedway racing. It may not be the most bettable product by any stretch of the imagination, but there is a definite skill figuring out where your car is best in the draft, how you get to the lead line and go from there. The one thing that I had the most problem with is that if you weren't the couple of the lead cars, you really didn't have an opportunity to pass other than with pit road strategy. And that's just not something that we've grown accustomed to in the past and watching races at Dega. Now, Chase Elliott moves forward. We will get to the playoff reset in stage two, fill you in on some of the odds changes and everything that has gone on there. But I think we need to start with a massive penalty that was handed down from NASCAR. It doesn't impact a playoff driver, but clearly the folks at the R&D Center were none too thrilled with whatever SHR did to that four machine.
Whoa. Yeah. They came down hard. And I'm pretty sure I read that this is a similar penalty that what they, you know, handed out to Keselowski. I think right now, especially when it's Kevin Harvick and some of the stuff, some of the comments he's made, I think it's really important that NASCAR comes out with a great explanation as to what happened and why they were penalized in that manner. So I think it's just great for clarity, because here's the deal. I don't want the media or people on Twitter or fans saying, oh, well, you know, had he not opened his mouth, NASCAR wouldn't have slapped him with this penalty. Well, it all depends on what actually happened. And until there's clarity, there's going to be these rumors circulating. So I think if NASCAR just comes out and says exactly what happened and show that they've penalized people in the same way in the past, that everyone can just move on from this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you want. I mean, we know NASCAR has to operate in shades of gray. It's a little bit different in terms of being able to go, hey, look, this is going to be black and white. And there was no greater illustration than what we saw with the penalty handed out to William Byron. And full disclosure here, as we record on Wednesday night, I know the show goes live Friday mornings, we won't know the result of what William Byron's appeal looked like and how that will change his playoff outlook. As a result, later on in the show, unless you have major things you want to share there for Byron, not a driver I really want to touch on, because I feel when you don't have all the data in front of you, it doesn't allow you to make informed choices. But Kevin Harvick's issue aside with what happened and the points penalty, Alex Bowman unable to race, dealing with a concussion. You hope he gets well soon. He won't be available this weekend in the Roval either. Kurt Busch still dealing with a concussion. So clearly NASCAR is going to have to figure out exactly what is causing some of these impacts, because it's not front-end collisions. It's almost every time that these guys hit hard in the back, that seems to be where they're most at risk for injury.
Yeah, I mean, they're telling drivers to lean their heads back. That's, you know, that's to help kind of shield the blow. And you know, I to be honest, I played a little football growing up, and the hardest hits were always when your helmet came back and hit the ground. So I imagine that, you know, if it doesn't feel good just getting hit standing still, I can only imagine what it feels like at, you know, 130 to 190 miles an hour. And it's something that NASCAR is going to take care of. They have to, right? And you know, it's crazy that Bowman kind of went through the kind of releasing that he wasn't going to race. And then you have the Tua incident later that night in the NFL. And it's kind of a reminder that, hey, you know, these are people too. And I'm really proud of Alex Bowman for stepping up and saying, dude, I can't race. You know, it's the end of his chance at the championship, but ultimately the right call. And I think everyone, you know, should feel comfortable and come out and say, hey, something's not right. I'm not okay to race. And I think everyone will be comfortable with that situation moving forward, especially next year. I don't know what happened today at the crash data or whatever that they had going on in Ohio, but hopefully the NASCAR is able to learn and able to make changes before next season.
Yep, that's all you want. I mean, you mentioned it. It's all about player safety in stick and ball sports. It's all about driver safety here. And it's not an easy situation for Alex Bowman, who was racing for a playoff spot, when you have sponsors, a team that you have to keep happy. So again, full gut check there. I tip my hat to him doing what's best for him. You have to live with the decisions at the end of the day, and that's who you should be looking out for, is number one. Last but not least, as far as stage one, it's not related to Talladega, but we'll wave the white flag here. AJ Allmendinger officially announces what was widely speculated. He's going to move to a full-time cup ride as a member of Colleague Racing. You have to imagine AJ will be extremely formidable with the equipment we've seen from Colleague, some of the good finishes from Justin Haley, and more importantly, we know that the Cup Series isn't going away from their love for road course racing. It may play right into the hands of Dinger next season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm a big Dinger fan, as you know, they do race on road courses often in Xfinity, and by the way, Dinger's good at those places. And so I tend to listen to his radio often, and I love that team. I don't know, his spotter just cracks me up, and the banter between you know, his crew chief, and you know, and AJ's always pissed off in the car. You know, he did nothing's right, and then they're talking like, well, you know, we're running good lap times. And so I think he's great for the sport. He speaks his mind. He's great at road courses, and I think you'll see him compete on a few ovals next year, for sure. And any like high braking tracks, like he tends to run well at Martinsville, and he's also for some reason pretty good at Dover as well, if I remember correctly. So it definitely great for that team and Colleague Racing. It's great to have an owner in Matt Colleague that's willing to go out there and spend money and create a competitive team. I think it's great for the sport, just like Trackhouse has been great this year.
Yeah, and I mean, Dinger finally broke through on a play track. Said he's not thrilled to go to Super Speedways. He got a little push from Landon Castle there to grab that checkered flag at Talladega. So no doubt it'll be good to have him back at the highest level of NASCAR.
The other thing, we too, how- he gave Landon a ton of credit. I love that. I loved how he gave all the credit to Landon. And, you know, because there's a lot of times where if you don't have someone pushing you and they actually peek out and try to make the pass, you ain't winning. So credit to Landon for getting that done, and credit for AJ to actually give him a shout out.
You know, that's the one thing that we see at these super speedways. I mean, you can't do it alone. You have to be a member of the draft. You have to know which cars you trust to be around, which ones are going to push and give you the opportunity to get where you need to go in the final laps of the race. So that's about enough discussion for Talladega. It's one of the great spectacles on the NASCAR calendar, a racetrack that I want to get to. I wish I would have been there at some point in my 20s so I could have partaken in some of the shenanigans that go on in the infield. I feel like as a 40-year-old worm, you and I may have aged ourselves out of those kind of antics over the course of a race weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably, if I go, I'll probably watch the last 25 laps from like a hotel room, you know, trying to get in bed early and, you know, get my 8 hours of sleep.
Hey, you know what? All that beauty over there and hair product don't come without a price tag. So we know you have to get your requisite 8 hours of sleep. Stage one officially complete around these parts. Again, want to remind all of you, follow Chris on Twitter at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the Stay Green podcast and all things Bet the Board at Bet the Board Pod. And stage two worm will be a little bit longer than what it's been in the past for us as we start to look at a playoff reset of sorts. We have three drivers below the cut line now. Alex Bowman obviously out of that equation, trying to earn their way into the final eight. The first thing I have to ask you, and we've brought it up a number of times already, and I feel it bears repeating, strategy for going into handicapping the odds to win the championship. We'll get into the race itself shortly in stage three, but what has changed for you, especially when you look at some of the prices and the adjustments that odds makers have made?
Yeah, I think that now I actually do think that like Chase is more properly priced. Obviously he's through, and there's, to me at this point in the season and where NASCAR's at with some of the issues that they've had, being through to the next round is really, really important. So, you know, I think that it opens him up to go ahead and be really aggressive and have a chance to win this race this week. And man, when it comes to the rest of these guys, I mean, I've racked my brain trying to figure out where I think there might be value. And it's just so circumstantial. It's really, really hard to say, I think this will happen, and because of that, I like this particular driver. So still a lot of unknowns, but I'm at least excited because I think we have an edge. Maybe not necessarily on the cup futures, because that's going to be so indicative of what other drivers do, but definitely when it comes to race outrights and race matchups.
So you mean A plus B doesn't always equal C when you're trying to do your NASCAR algorithms and algebra to try and factor all of that in? And just to kind of put in perspective, you mentioned Chase being properly priced. You know, some of the sharpest books out there now have him at 2-1. He's got a boatload of playoff points that give him a huge edge when we go to Vegas, when we go to Homestead, and we go to a track where we know he's been outstanding at Martinsville. Kyle Larson and Denny Hamlin right behind Chase in that ballpark of 9-2 or 5-1. A trio of drivers and Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano, and Ross Chastain priced widely at 7-1. Again, these prices are not exactly a snapshot of what you may have available for your chosen books, but as always, look around for the best numbers, and that's where things start to get interesting. So, because I like to put you on the spot and I like to ask you the difficult questions, if I'm forcing your hand to look at some of the drivers, Byron at column 20-1, Suarez 40-1, Austin Cindric 50-1, Chase Briscoe 60-1, and I've seen Christopher Bell as high as the triple digits at 100-1, I don't want you necessarily to double down on your Bell position, so I'll cut it to the other four drivers.
Which of those four
drivers would you think offers a little bit of value, and how would you go about supporting your case?
You're saying Suarez, Cindric, and Briscoe, or are you including Byron on that?
And I'll include Byron at 20-1 as well.
Okay, I have to go with William Byron, because you still have to be the top finisher at Phoenix in order to win this championship. That's not a surprise, by the way. That's not new news that I'm providing. And I think Byron's probably the only guy out of those three. Of course, I say that, and Briscoe won there earlier. So I think that most of the teams have caught up to Briscoe. I do not anticipate him you know, let's just say he does make the final four. I would be shocked if he went out there and snoozed them at Phoenix. I think that teams have learned so much more about this car, and that team's kind of stayed static. If anything, they've lost ground recently. If you look at the finishes outside of the last two races, it's been pretty putrid for that team. So, and I don't think Cindric is going to be a threat there. Suarez just hasn't done enough for me consistently week in and week out. William Byron is different, and he could go out there. He led a lot of laps here at the Roval and was able to, you know, I mean, until he kind of wrecked out, he had a small chance at moving on. But I think William Byron at 20 is probably the best price of all those guys if you do take away Chris Bell, because Chris Bell could win this race, and if you have him at 100-1, you could see him you know, holding that championship trophy if he gets chips to fall his way.
Oh, there's no doubt about it that if Bell obviously can get through, you'd love to be able to have that lottery ticket at 100-1 that you could earn off of at a moment's notice, because while he doesn't have the playoff points working in his favor, he would be right back in the thick of things as far as having a chance to earn his way in at mile and a half tracks where he's performed well in the past. So Christopher Bell clearly going to need things to go. It's essentially a parlay of his outright odds this weekend in addition to his odds to win the championship at such long shot pricing. So a relatively brief stage two, much like a road course. We're talking 25 laps and an extended stage three where the real meat is on the bone, and I think we have to kind of dive into it. But before we get to stage three, as we always do, want to remind you about the on-track activities this weekend. It'll kick off Saturday bright and early for those of us on the West Coast, a little bit later for you guys back east at 10 a.m. Eastern. Xfinity practice goes right into Xfinity qualifying, and those are available on the NBC Sports app. Cup practice will get underway at 9:30 Eastern. You can see that on USA. And of course, Cup practice goes right into Cup qualifying as well. A little reprieve in the Saturday schedule, and at 3:00 Eastern, the drive for the Cure 250 presented by Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina can be watched on good old-fashioned NBC. Sunday, as far as the Cup race is concerned, 2 Eastern, dropping of the green flag. We'll give it plus or minus 20 minutes. We know NASCAR doesn't always do things in the most punctual of manners. The Bank of America Roval 400, you can check that out on NBC. All right, Worm, stage three, and we got a lot of ground to cover. It's good to have a track that we can break down, hopefully find some unique investment opportunities for us going forward. And when we look at the track specs, this will be the fifth trip that we've made to the Roval. The Roval, a 17-turn, 2.32-mile road course, and it's the sixth road course for the next-gen car following regular season events that we've already seen at Circuit of the Americas, Sonoma, Road America, Indianapolis, and, of course, Watkins Glen. The reason they call it the Roval, it's a combination road course oval, hence Roval. There you go. I've made all of you smarter, our loyal listeners. 109 laps on the schedule, a shade under 253 miles. For those math wizards out there in the metric system, it's the Bank of America 400 because it's 400 kilometers that we'll be traveling. Stage lengths, 25 laps for stage one, 25 laps for stage two, 59 for stage three. And the reason I bring that up, Worm, this may be the perfect opportunity for you to remind folks that are new to handicapping road courses the challenges and nuances that come with this particular discipline.
Yeah, this is way different than, you know, a typical, you know, oval, I would say, because you don't lose a lap when you pit. So obviously you can steal some track position. If stage points aren't important to you and you know the caution's coming, as long as you pit before three to go, you'll be able to hop on pit road, get all your service. You'll cycle out at, you know, 25th to 30th place, but all those cars in front of you will then, you know, obviously pit and take their service. So you'll kind of cycle out ahead of them because you didn't lose a lap. Now, this is a little different because this is a cutoff race. So you could see competitive cars, instead of undercutting stages, you could see them actually stay out and try to steal some stage points, you know, and I guess I'm specifically talking about Chase Briscoe and Austin Cindric. I think that those are two guys that you would see that both qualify well. And I think that that's really important this week, that qualifying, I think that this is the most important qualifying of the season. If you look at Austin Cindric, who's his average starting spot is 6.3 on the comp tracks. Okay, Hang on. I want to talk about the comp tracks. First of all, I actually...
Well, I was... You know what? That's my job as host. I was going to follow up with that. But you know what? Since you want to play host, since you want to play analyst, and you're going to get to do both those roles next week on the Stay Green podcast...
Perfect.
I'll give you the chance to clarify what you want to use for comp tracks, because I think most people come in, they go, oh, it's a road course. They're all created equally. But my gut tells me you have a very different spin on that particular storyline.
Yeah, I only take four of the five. I leave Sonoma out. There's a little bit different tire, and it just races way differently. From it's considered more of a technical track, and some of the information doesn't always kind of line up symmetrically with some of these other tracks. So I kind of throw that one out just because I would rather have you know, a little bit smaller data set, and that'll give me a better idea of who's good on more of this specific type road course. And so I've thrown that out, Sonoma, and then I'm just working with the Glen, Indy, Coda, and what's the last one I'm missing?
Road America.
Road America. There you go. There you go. You got to play analyst there. So now we're even.
Yeah, because you're a dumbass. Me playing analyst anybody's cause around here. You're supposed to be the brains behind this operation. I'm supposed to be the point guard who stands outside the arc and only shoots the basketball once a game.
You just did. That was your
when
shot.
When absolutely required. Yeah, I shot my shot. I'm done now. So when you use those courses, we have plenty of drivers that we can break down. I do want to go through a bunch of them, both those that are in the playoff race and those that are just out there for a little bit of a joyride.
Well, I want to finish qualifying just because
Through the qualifying.
This is really important because I want to talk about three specific drivers. I want to talk about Austin Cindric, Chase Briscoe, and then Chris Bell. I'm going to leave William Byron out of this just because we don't know if he's going to win his appeal. And I'd rather just kind of stick with these three drivers. Obviously Alex Bowman will not be moving on. So, Austin Cindric and Chase Briscoe have an average starting position. Cindric is 6.3. Chase Briscoe is 8.3 on the four road courses that I would consider comp tracks. This is really important because if they can do that and solidify themselves in the top 10, it makes stage racing way easier when it comes to racking up points. All they have to do is kind of maintain track position. And if you're able to do that and you can squeak out some points, it makes it a hell of a lot easier. Compare that to Chris Bell, where his average starting spot is 16th, 16.3 over those four tracks. It's going to be really hard for him to actually guarantee himself stage points. Now, I do think that this is a track where you're able to make some passes. But if you're Chris Bell and you're not in the top 10 with, you know, five laps to go, you're going to have to kind of make a call and say, hey, I need to undercut the stage because I'm going to need to get track position at some point, whether it's to score stage points in the next stage or whether it's to actually have a chance to win the race. And I'm looking at Cindric and Briscoe, and I think both of those guys will qualify in the top 10. I think even Cindric might be able to, well, both of them could probably would pull it or could pull it, where I think that, you know, the Toyotas have really struggled on road courses, and I think Chris Bell is going to have a little bit of an uphill battle. So I think that that's really important to understand, and that changes the complexity of these points, especially when, you know, both of those guys are beating Chris Bell by what is he? Bell's 10 points back of them.
There's a decent chunk back.
No, he's 33 points back of them. So, you know, here's the other thing. Even if Bell has a great run and gets up to eighth, and you have Cindric in fifth and sixth, like, they're only going to gain more points on him. So it's going to be so important that, you know, Chris Bell qualifies well. If he can get up there and qualify, you know, either ahead or within four or five spots of them, I think he could see him stay out and try to win some stage points. But otherwise, I think he needs to go win a race. And I think it's really important that you understand that when you're making your bets, because Chris Bell, you know, the price on him to win the race is like 16-1. I wouldn't be anywhere near him in a matchup, because I think whether he's fast or not does not necessarily matter, because his strategy is going to be race winning, and it could be race winning or bust. So that's just one scenario I wanted to go over before we get into driver by driver, just so that way everyone understands how the points can affect the strategy of other drivers.
Well, it's a good point on Christopher Bell, and I'll ask you the follow-up on him when you talk about his outright price. You said you're going to avoid matchups. How would you approach some of the derivative markets? Would it suffice to say that if the out it's boom or bust there, and you would avoid top threes, you would avoid top fives and top tens, and not even factor him in to the calculus behind building a race card?
I don't think that he'll be in that top 10 scenario. I mean, obviously, yes, he could finish in the top 10, but I don't think you're going to get paid properly on it. I would say that that top three price is probably something that's a little bit more realistic to, you know, I guess to a good investment, just because you're going to look at like a 4.5 or 5 to 1 on that top three price. I don't have it right in front of me, but I'll pull it up here. And
that always makes for great podcasting.
Yeah, exactly. Here, let me get this for you. So he's 4 to 1 top three. I like that because at least he puts himself in a position to win and you're going to get paid on it. Whereas that top 10 price, which is Chris Bell, is -150. You know what? You're giving up a little bit of juice there for, I don't know. I don't think there's much upside there because he's either going to be in the top three or he's going to be busting. So it's boom or bust for him. That's why I like more of a top three or a win price on some of these, you know, maybe even a guy like Byron, kind of the same sort of scenario. Whereas I do like it with Cindric and Briscoe, where if they're kind of playing it safe, they can kind of point their way in through the first couple stages and they'll be happy with a, you know, a 7th to 12th place finish. And you know, your even money on them is a much better bet than, you know, laying that -150 on a Chris Bell for that top 10.
I mean, these are all things that you have to factor in, and every race isn't created equally. There's obviously unique circumstances around here, knowing that this is an elimination race, that the Roval in and of itself, if it was standalone, would create unique wagering opportunities as well. So I think that's a great way to kind of approach it and highlight why certain markets may offer more upside and opportunity given the way that this race could play out compared to what it would do during the regular season. As we get into some of the individual drivers, I don't think it'll shock anybody that Chase Elliott is listed as the favorite. I did see one prominent shop open him as high as 7 to 1 in the outright market. Thought that was a little bit rich. We'll call 4 to 1 more or less his consensus at this point. He's won here in 2019 and 2020. Obviously, no pressure whatsoever for the 9 car this weekend since he's already through to the next round. He did finish 12th here when his teammate Kyle Larson got to victory lane. Suffice to say, Chase Elliott ain't going out there racing for points this weekend, Worm. He's racing for the checkered flag, and anything less, he could care less.
Absolutely. I mean, he's in a great spot. You know, last year he was able to kind of limp around with, you know, the rear end of his vehicle just crumbled up and somehow able to sneak away with a 12th place finish and move on. Just a testament to that team and all the hard work and kind of perseverance. But they're not going to have to worry about that this year. So, you know, he's obviously been great on road courses, you know, for years. And this year, obviously, more of the same. The one thing about him this year is he hasn't been the best. And we'll get into who the best driver has been here in a minute. But Chase is going to qualify well. He's going to run well. The thing that he has, kind of the aces in the hole for him, is he can go out there and win. He can take chances. He can be super aggressive and not have to worry about losing his chance at moving on. So Chase is going to be good. You know, I anticipate, you know, as long as there's no issues, he's going to kind of be around in the top five all day. I don't know that I'd be investing in that top five price. I like him more to win because if he's in that position, he has the ability to go win with no downside risk. So maybe avoid him a little bit in the top five because if he's not in the top five, usually it's an issue. So I like his win price more than I like anything else.
I'll say the most important thing for Chase Elliott to worry about this weekend, if he can't win the race, is to not make any enemies going forward. Because the last thing he needs is somebody trying to breathe down his neck, whether they're a playoff driver or someone that's been eliminated, that would like to extract their pound of flesh over the next trio of races before we get to Phoenix. But Chase Elliott, a worthy favorite, given the fact that the racing circumstances may set up quite nicely for him and that this is a track where he's had a very high level of success in the past. Ryan Blaney, Worm, still winless on the season. When we look at Blaney, he's 32 points clear of the drivers tied for 8th and 9th. Second place finish at Talladega was his 10th top 5 of the season. When you look at Brian Blaney's team, they've dealt with adversity. They're without their crew chief and two key crew members. Started the 4-race suspension at Talladega, won't be there this weekend. Ryan Blaney had a sweat out the end of the regular season at Daytona. You talk about limping around the track. The 12 was the definition of that. And then if you thought that was bad, he took it one step further and had a limp around at Bristol and get things to fall the right way. So this is a driver that's essentially had 9 lives so far this year. Blaney would clinch with 23 points, which would constitute a 14th place finish and no stage points no matter what anyone else does. Has 2 top 10s on road courses so far this season. But when you're looking at Blaney, what are your expectations for the 12 car this weekend at the Roval?
Oh, I'm stage points racing if I'm Ryan Blaney. Absolutely. I mean, you can't control what's going to happen in those last, you know, in that last stage of 59 laps. You know, he qualifies pretty well on road courses. 13th is his average starting spot. And you have to imagine that there are going to be a few guys that are going to try to undercut the stage. And if he can escape with some stage points and that 14th place finish, no matter what, can turn into like 21st or 22nd, I think if you're that team, you absolutely do it. He's gone from, you know, kind of barely making the playoffs to now being 32 points to the good, you know, only behind, you know, Chase, who's locked himself in. And I just think with this car and it's the fact that it's so edgy, I don't know that I'm taking a lot of risks at this point in the season. I know that the 12 car hasn't won and everyone's been, you know, very critical of that. But you know what? It's survive in advance. And here's the thing. If he can advance to Phoenix, he can certainly win there. He had arguably the best car there. So I don't know that he's going to be too aggressive until he's guaranteed himself in or locked himself in. Then he might try to go for the win. I don't know that that's going to happen. But I expect a very conservative race out of that 12 team.
Yeah, points racing carries such a negative connotation in this day and age for NASCAR, but let's be honest here. It's a smart way to do business if it gives you the opportunity to accomplish your greater goals. There's no reason to drive around that track like a kamikaze racer if pointing your way into the next round gives you, to use your term, survive and advance ability to tracks where we know the 12 car can be competitive. He's shown speed at mile and a half tracks, and we'll have 2 of them in the next 3. Trackhouse Racing has been one of the bigger stories so far this season, and it's not just one car, it's both cars, and they've performed extremely well when we've gone to these road courses. So Justin Marks talking about how proud he is of his team. This will be 100 races coming this weekend, and the milestone of competing to put both of our cars into the round of 8 is a testament to all the people that trusted me and the vision of Trackhouse and decided their professional lives and dedicated, their professional lives to that cause. It's pretty awesome. Ross Chastain, 16-1 outright here. We talked about his playoff odds at 7-1. Chastain would clinch with 28 points. He won at COTA and was 7th at Sonoma, 4th at Road America. So we know the Trackhouse cars have had speed on road courses. Last 2 road courses haven't been great. Pretty sure Ross Chastain not going to try and find a shortcut around the Roval, but if he does, I'll tip my hat, and I'm sure NASCAR will have a penalty waiting for him if that's the case.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know what to think about this car this week. Well, I mean, I'm going to talk about the one car first. I guess if you were to just tell me that Ross Chastain is 15-1 at a road course, I'd be super stoked. I'd be like, hey, I think that's a great bet. You know, he's had some success, obviously, with a huge win earlier in the year. He's had speed and he's passed cars on road courses. Now, where it gets a little hairy with Ross is, are we going to see any sort of retaliation towards Ross? You know, it's not like one or two guys have an issue with him. It's, you know, half of the damn field has an issue with him. So if you're going to do it and you're going to do it safely, it's probably going to be here. It's going to be at Martinsville. And, you know, we saw it last year with Kevin Harvick taking it out on Chase Elliott. And then, you know, irony, Chase makes it and Harvick doesn't. So I don't know. I'm just nervous on this Chastain guy. I think that, you know, I like his 15-1 win price more than I like, you know, him in some auxiliary stuff and even matchups, just because I think that there's just that risk and you want to get paid off on that risk. So, very impressive season out of both of those guys. I don't expect much from Suarez. He's kind of been a snore lately. And I think that Ross has done a really good job of kind of racing conservatively. 7th at Kansas, 6th at Bristol, 13th at Texas, and he was actually way better than that in my opinion. And then 4th at Talladega. So, you know, I think that this team, I don't want to say they're peaking because I think they peaked a little earlier in the season. But, you know, if he has a top 5 race car, he's a threat to win week in and week out. I just don't know if he has what's been coming to him for a while.
Yeah, they may be figuring some things out. And You know, when you look at Chastain, maybe racing with some of that aggression that made him so successful, you do hope that the other drivers out there that want to try and exact a measure of revenge, you know, err on the side of caution. These guys are going to be out on the track with each other, and the last thing I'd ever want to see is any of these guys ruining someone's chances to win a championship or advance to another round. But we know, hey, look, NASCAR drivers never forget. These grudges last a long, long time, and asking them to cease and desist in the course of one season, probably a bit of a pipe dream. Denny Hamlin, 20-1, a little bit of a long shot this weekend. He hasn't exactly been great. No JGR car has, for that matter, on road courses all season. He clinches with 35 points, very comfortable in this spot if he can avoid disaster. Just one win to his credit in 44 career road course starts. I believe that came at Sonoma, or no, Watkins Glen or Sonoma, if memory serves me correct. He obviously doesn't need a win and most likely won't need to finish second, but he does have 19 career top tens, and that likely would be good enough to get him into the round of eight. But how concerned should we be, Worm, about JGR and their inability to unload fast cars on road tracks all road courses all season long?
Very. I think that this is a major concern for the Toyotas that are left in the playoffs. Absolutely. I think that, you know, Chris Bell has clearly been the best Toyota week in and week out, but Denny's had speed, just not on road courses. And I'll tell you what, some concerns there, because not only does he finish poorly, he's kind of qualified poorly, and you know what, he's actually finishing worse than he's qualifying, which is typically a bad sign. That means you're getting passed, and I think there's a little bit of concern. But you know, Denny is very comfortable on old tires out front, so if there's anyone that can steal some track position on some older tires and, you know, hold off guys to maybe get some stage points, Denny's the guy that can get that done. He led some laps last year at the Roval. And, you know, he's got speed in his race car. And maybe if he does get to clean air or somehow Toyota gets out front, maybe their car will be handling different. But at this point in the year, I mean, this is the sixth road course, and the Toyotas have been a non-threat to the rest of the field. So a little bit of concern there. I do want to bring up another topic, which is actually was brought up. I had it written down, and Rory brought it up. Rory Picks on Twitter. He did a great job of kind of stealing my thunder here. He brought up a good point about this Chastain.
Good for Rory to add value every now and again. Instead of just coming in with Roll Tide or whatever nonsense that comes out of his mouth.
Yeah, he sounds like Rodney Childers when he talks. but he brought up a good point, and you know, he now apparently Denny has it out for William Byron, and he has it out for Ross Chastain. But he also has it out for the safety of these race cars. So how do you justify, if you're Denny Hamlin, wrecking either one of those guys? I mean, if you think that a collision to the rear of the car, whether it's, you know, whether you're just hitting them or they actually hit the wall with the rear of the car, if you're worried about their safety, I don't know how you can justify that in your mind. So I'd be really curious what, you know, if what Denny would have to say to that. I would love for a reporter or someone, you know, on pit road to ask that question. And I think that if I'm Chastain or if I'm Byron, I'm paying a reporter to ask that question, because that'll put him on the spot. He's certainly going to say, oh, I would never do that. And then, you know, maybe they'll survive, you know, to live another race. But I thought that was kind of an interesting dynamic with Denny, you know, kind of having it for NASCAR and with those comments and on social media, but also saying that other guys have something coming.
Well, and the other thing too is we talked about this before, and I'll bring it up again, that I think if Denny were to do something, NASCAR has to rule with an iron fist, because you have to set an example of someone that's not just one of your more talented drivers, but somebody that has an ownership stake in a team. So I know it's not a level playing field all the time, but Denny and Brad aren't level competitors. I mean, they're part owners in prominent race teams. They have to lead by example, and I think in the back of their mind, NASCAR has to realize that. And while Denny can be outspoken publicly, and I love that about it, because he's taken a very different style to it that Brad has, at the same time, I am sure there are conversations taking place behind closed doors in terms of how this will get rectified one way or another. So interesting to keep tabs there on the storylines. Joey Logano also priced at 20-1. Relatively straightforward path for him to get in. Probably wasn't that thrilled with how he raced last week in Talladega, knowing how talented he has been and some of the finishes we've seen on super speedways from the 22 before. Logano ran well in the previous two road courses. Sixth at Indy, third at Watkins Glen. I will say there's an asterisk by Indy because I feel like he picked up 15 spots just throwing the nose of his car in there to try and go from what should have been a car finishing between 15th and 20th to getting in the top 10. But when you look at Joey Logano, what's the prognosis for him?
Yeah, he's got two top 10s out of the four that I have from a comp track perspective. He hasn't had any speed. You know, if you just kind of use your eyeball test and you're watching the race, you're not seeing that car move through the field in making passes. I think, you know, he's qualified kind of right around in that Blaney area, maybe a little bit better, right around 12th. And he's, you know, his average finish is 16th. I know that there's probably an externality sitting in there, but I think you'll see that this 22 team takes a pretty conservative approach. They're another team that I think if they can just get to Phoenix, they have an opportunity to qualify well, and they can certainly win that race. So I think both the 12 and 22 will be on the same game plan. They know they're probably not a threat to win, at least, you know, just kind of outside looking in at this point. Now, if something happens in the race where they find themselves out front, these are race car drivers, they're going to go win. But I think that their outlook going into the weekend will just be, hey, let's get some stage points and let's get a solid finish and let's move on to a couple of mile and a halfs and then Martinsville, where we've been great in the past.
If we're talking about a car that has had speed at road tracks, it may not be Joey Logano, but it has most definitely been Kyle Larson driving the 5 car for Hendrick Motorsports. And his price this weekend, 8-1, 4 career road course victories, including winning the most recent road course at Watkins Glen. He finished 3rd at Road America. This Hendrick driver, when you look at Larson, he just can't make any mistakes. He doesn't make mistakes. He's going to be fine. He's going to secure his passage to the next round and give himself an opportunity to most likely defend going into the final 4 races of the season. He did win at Charlotte last year and followed that up by claiming victory in 3 of the next 4 races. He, however, has only gotten a victory lane twice so far this season.
Well, I mean, he's your race winner from last year, and kind of shockingly too. I mean, he had to have his car fixed. He was on pit road forever, kind of started that third stage in the back of the pack and was able to just kind of work his way up. Really impressive team effort. Cliff Daniels did an especially great job last year, I think, staying calm, getting that race car fixed, and then ultimately getting a win. So again, I think Larson, I think he'll qualify better than some of the guys that we've been talking about. And so I think he'll actually, you know, have a little bit of that grit to go win the race. He's great here. And, you know, he's coming off the most recent win at Watkins Glen. I don't know that I think of the four comp tracks, I think that Watkins Glen probably is the least correlated, not from a finishing perspective, but from a driving perspective. So I think that you'll see him score some stage points, massive stage points. I think he'll kind of be in the top 3 the first 2 stages, and I think you'll see him go for the win. Not jumping at that 8-1 price, just so much can happen, and if, you know, he, you know, has an issue and he has to, you know, kind of lose some track position and back in 20th, you might be able to see a better price than 8-1. So I'll be on the sidelines for this 8-1 price, but I certainly think that he'll be a top 5 driver.
Austin Cindric, 15-1, right there along the cut line. We know that he does have his roots in road course racing. He started in the top 10 in 6 of his 8 cup road course starts, 2 top finishes, 5 top 10s, finished 2nd in Indianapolis, 5th at Sonoma. I know you threw that away, but I'm going to add that in there just to piss you off. Obviously, the key for Team Penske, he's got to put himself in a good qualifying position, as you highlighted earlier, and pick up stage points in that first stage.
Absolutely. I think he will. I'm pretty high on Austin Cindric this week. I pretty much have been high on him in this round the entire time. I think that even though it's a kind of a high beta round when it comes to a volatility and unpredictability standpoint, it actually sets up well for that 2 team. And he has a chance to go on a road course and secure himself in the final 8. And I think he'll do it. That team has just been really, really solid on qualifying for road courses. And here's the other thing, too. I trust Cindric a lot more than I trust Briscoe if they do lose track position to work their way back up through the field. I think if Briscoe maintains track position, along with Cindric, that they can be, you know, more of a coin toss on who's better. But I do think that if Briscoe loses track position and Cindric loses track position, there's a way better chance that Cindric works his way back up through the field more so than Briscoe. So I definitely kind of give a tip of the cap to Cindric in that head-to-head matchup. And I expect Cindric to move on. He's my pick of, you know, the guys that are on the outside, you know, or well, kind of outside. He's tied with Briscoe, but loses a tiebreaker. I would say I think Cindric is a guy that moves on.
When you look at four drivers, non-playoff drivers, that is, that have shown an aptitude and an ability to win on road courses, Tyler Reddick has been arguably the most dominant and the fastest over the last couple of races on these type of tracks, showed his medal on road courses all season, average finish of 10th, if we included Sonoma, wins at Indy and Road America, runner-up here at the Roval last season. Martin Truex Jr., 25-1, four career road course wins, but we talked about the struggles of JGR specifically at these type of tracks. Michael McDowell comes off a third-place finish at Talladega, has had a career high this year, 12 top 10 finishes, an outstanding season for the 34, and includes top 10s in each of the last four road course events this year. And last but certainly not least, Christopher Buescher. You can find him downward of 20-1, upwards of 25-1 I've seen. Finished third here last year, had an awesome car in Indy despite it actually catching on fire, found his way to get back into contention, and a lot of road course success, not just in the Cup Series, but the Xfinity Series as well. You don't have to deep dive all four of these drivers, but just wanted to highlight them and see if any of them caught your eye for this weekend.
Well, my pick is Tyler Reddick to win. I'm not going to bet that 6-1 price because I think might be able to find something better live. But there's no one that's been better. I mean, his average finish on comp tracks is 3.5. He's won two of the four. He's had three top fives and four top tens. This has been the fastest car week in and week out on those particular tracks, and it's not even close. I think that, you know, he has nothing to lose. He's just like Chase Elliott, and the fact that he can go out there and take some chances and win the race. Stage points don't mean much to him, especially when he's on his way out at RCR. Like, his job is to go win races. So I think that he should be the favorite over Chase Elliott. I actually have a little side action with old Skybox NASCAR. He likes Chase. I like Tyler. So we have a little friendly wager on the side.
Hopefully he tried to make you shave your head if you lose that friendly wager.
No, he just gave me a -130 bet at even money. So, you know, I can scalp it back if I need to. Anyway,
I figured there was a way that you were going to be able to dump that kind of liability if your position changed.
Yeah, of course. Truex, I mean, listen, if he wasn't in a Toyota, if this is like the old Martin Truex, I'd love this price. But for some reason, those Toyotas just have not been hooked up at all on road courses. And even though I love that price at 25-1 and he's had so much speed in these tracks, I don't think it's there for him. I don't think it's there for Toyota, and especially the guys that aren't in the playoffs. So that would include Truex. I mean, I hope he looks good because I think there's be a great opportunity live, but, you know, not a great performance and as of late. And those guys just can't seem to keep it on the track, so I anticipate more of the same. I mean, Michael McDowell and Chris Buescher, I mean, I want to give these guys a standing ovation. I mean, what a year they've had. I mean, 12 top 10 finishes for Michael McDowell. And we're not even talking about just road courses, obviously. I mean, these are ovals where this guy's getting it done. So he's a great road course racer. I really like him as a driver, and you know, if he gets a lead at a road course, he's going to be tough to pass. And the same goes for Chris Buescher. I think last year it was, you know, you get so caught up in all the storylines that, you know, the playoffs have going on throughout the race, you kind of forget that Chris Buescher was really mixing it up there, you know, kind of in the middle of the third stage. And you know, that 17 car wasn't as fast last year as it has been this year. So I love Chris Buescher, and I think that that's maybe a little bit of a hint as to what our best bet of the week will be.
Oh, well, we're getting there, my friend. We're getting there. I want to remind all of our loyal listeners as we wave the checkered flag on the culmination of stage three to follow Chris on Twitter. That's at ChrisWerme15, ChrisWerme15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Again, most importantly, follow the podcast for all things Stay Green and other endeavors at Bet the Board Pod. And Worm, I'm not sure if you knew this, we launched a brand new Bet the Board branded podcast today earlier this week. First episode episode as we approach the sports card and sports memorabilia space with a minority owner of PWCC Marketplace. For all those sports memorabilia folks that are out there, hopefully we can make you a little bit smarter in this space, the same way we've done with NASCAR since the midpoint of the season. All right, investment advice. We haven't really been all of that jumping into the pool with both feet. We gave out a couple of long shots last weekend. I think Corey LaJoy was already out of the race with a broken steering column before I cracked my first beer watching NFL football alongside the race. That's what I get for encouraging people even to plunk down a few dollars at a super speedway. I have a feeling you're going to have a little bit more conviction with where we're going for an investment opportunity pre-week at the Roval come Sunday.
I mean, Chris Buescher, top 10, minus 110, book it. I mean, that's he's done this every year or every year, every road course. You know, even when he was on fire and decided to stay in the car, I think he ended up finishing ninth and he was two laps down at one point and running some of the fastest laps on the track at Indy. So I think he's not getting a lot of respect from, you know, from the outright perspective. You know, that 25-1, I feel like it's a pretty healthy price for someone that's going to qualify pretty well. You know, but here's the biggest thing is he's been able to pass cars on road courses. And I think that the 17 team has more speed than they had even back at Watkins Glen, and certainly more than they had at Indy. You know, he's coming off a win at Bristol, a lot of momentum, and I really trust him as a driver. And for whatever that's worth, I love that Chris Buescher top 10 at minus 110.
Hey, every now and again, some tracks afford us opportunities to bet and take legit shots. Some tracks, it's better to err on the side of caution. Let's hope the Roval proves to be in that former camp and be quite profitable. As always, want to encourage you guys, our loyal listeners, check the Bet the Board podcast website for any updates for Sunday race day matchups. And I'm optimistic we'll be able to have something here after we told you there was no chance in hell we were adding a head-to-head at Talladega last weekend. Anything else, advice or otherwise, Worm, that you would like to share with the loyal listeners before we get out of Dodge? And you're going to have big shoes to fill next weekend because you're going solo to break down the race in Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
Boom, baby. I don't have to share any podium time with you. I'm so excited. But here's the deal. The last few races have been really, really tough to cap. And we've probably given away bets when we shouldn't have. You know, on a couple, we want to give you something, and I think that Todd did a great job of prefacing, you know, the unpredictability of some of these last tracks. But I really feel confident that we have an edge moving forward. I love the rest of the season. I think that there's an edge here at the Roval. There's certainly some in Vegas. Homestead's my favorite track on earth. Martinsville, as long as we get some passing, fingers crossed. There's going to be some plays there too, and of course Phoenix. You know, my home track. So really excited for these next couple weeks and more excited that I have all the podium time I want next week.
Yes, that you do. So don't let all of us down. Best of luck to all of you, our Stay Green listenership, wherever your investments take you. This is what happens at the tail end of a 24-hour fast here, where on Wednesday night for the highest of Jewish holidays, I'm thinking about being able to put a morsel of food in my system. So wherever your investments take you, whether it's the Xfinity Series or the Cup Race on Sunday, with a Chris Buescher top 10 ticket in hand, hopefully we'll see you at the window.
No, you got through it. Way to go.
Hey, this is how we do it. We fight.